Hello and welcome to another episode of The Code of Career with me, Cameron Blackwood. If you aren't familiar with me already, I am a software engineer of 2 years experience who used to be a technical recruiter. So I've created this podcast to show both sides of the equation and to help people learn some lessons on how to break into the industry and level up within it with a variety of really interesting guests. My guest today is super interesting and a really engaging guy. It's my longtime friend, Romeo. I would describe him as a digital nomad, self-employed guru, scientist, marketeer. He's a bit of everything, and he's definitely worth listening to his opinions on any topic because he is a smart guy. Romeo, great to have you on, mate.
Thank you. And I like that you called me a guru, but at the same time, I hate the term just because it's so glorified these days. But
yeah, but when it comes to marketing, I don't know many better. So for the guests who haven't come across you before, why don't you give a quick rundown of who you are and what your story is?
So before the word entrepreneur became cool, I guess I was an entrepreneur from way back when, and I think we'll get to that later on. But yes, I run a few businesses, do a few freelance gigs here and there in terms of content creation and a little bit of website design as well. But yes, the main focus is like two retail businesses, and I'm also a part-time cryptocurrency trader because lockdown makes you pick up new skills.
Very much so, and who doesn't love a busy schedule, right? Keeps you very busy. So just to get things started, with some quick fire questions, if that's all right, what was your first computer that you remember using?
So my first ever computer was back in 1997. It was a Pentium 2. If you were talking about stress testing earlier before the podcast, and I stress tested the hell out of that computer by loading up StarCraft, running multiple instances of Paint. I think I deleted System 32 once.
StarCraft, that is a name I have not heard in a long time. What happened to the good real-time strategy games? That's what I want to know.
I know, man.
It's a bygone era, sadly. Cool. Yeah, I think I didn't get my first computer until probably 10 years after that. So I think mine would have been a little bit better. So 97, you must have been running Windows 95 on there. That had an absolutely classic log-on sound, I remember. Yeah. I remember it very well.
Super, super memorable, that computer.
I was going to say the first time I used a computer, my dad had this huge blocky one and the kids will not know about this. The mouse had that ball in that you could like literally take out, and me and my brother would just take the ball out of the mouse and just chuck it around the house. And my parents just like, how are we using the computer? And like that bad boy ran the Pingu game like clockwork. It was a great machine. So thank you, Dad, if you're listening.
The kids don't know about the floppy disk anymore.
The
save icon.
Do you know what's interesting? I've noticed a few services have started changing that to a little cloud icon now, which is it's a sign of the times, really, isn't it?
It is a sign of I didn't even notice that. I didn't even know why there was a cloud icon on things. But yeah, that actually makes a lot more sense in this day and age.
It does. I do have to confess, whilst I have seen a floppy disk, I have never actually used one. I was straight to USB. Although I was kind of a like young teenager in that weird time where everyone decided to start burning stuff onto CDs. And I'm not just talking about mixtapes. And it'd be like, I've submitted my history homework on CD. Burn the doc file and give it in. It's a weird time. Anyway. So if we're talking, obviously this is a big topic, and we'll get into this in further detail later in the podcast. But what's your favorite tech city? Because you're a guy that's traveled pretty extensively.
If we're talking practically one that I live in, it has to be London. However, a tech city that is my actual favorite that I have not been to, Shenzhen, hands down. Like, no, not even a question. Shenzhen is one of the most technologically advanced cities in the world right now, and everything's made out there.
Anything the hipster to do choice, with, yeah.
What do you mean? But yeah,
well, it's very much the hipster choice to not go San Francisco, London, Berlin. One of my other guests said Stockholm the other day, which was quite a hipster choice. Okay. Shenzhen is a very hipster choice.
No. Everything's made out there. Like this thing that we're recording on right now, I'd say 95% of the components would be coming from Shenzhen. So, yes, I mean, if we're talking technology, I mean, they have cashierless supermarkets out there. Just walk in. It's kind of like the Amazon store, but yeah, they were doing it first. So I guess it is quite hipster.
It all runs through the WeChat ecosystem, doesn't it? Because there's been some talk, because in the West, we don't really have what you'd call a super app yet. And I know that's what like Revolut are trying to do right now, trying to become the first super app. And just apparently, from what I understand, I've never been to China. I'd be curious to go, but the whole tech ecosystem runs through WeChat. It's like WhatsApp and Monzo and Booking.com all rolled into one. It's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, imagine paying through WhatsApp. It's kind of like that. And that's just the beginning of it all. So, yeah, China's an early adapter when it comes to that. I mean, they're developing the digital yuan at the moment, which will integrate into WeChat inevitably. So, yeah, it's a crazy spot. I was supposed to move out there, but then Corona happened. So, yeah, maybe at some point. Maybe at some point.
Yeah, that would be a pretty awesome experience. So, if we're talking while you are working, or generally, are you more of a music or a podcast person when you're getting things done?
It's definitely music. I need something repetitive, something like techno. And I don't know if you know about, do you know about the anime Initial D?
That is the one with the racing and the one that goes, the Deja Vu song, right?
Yes. So like I've been listening to a lot of Eurobeat. So it's just English sentences that don't really make any sense. And just repetitive things just to, you know, keep focused.
Because that's actually how we met, isn't it? We met on a Plug DJ, which was a kind of web app in like kind of early 2010s where you could queue up and be basically the DJ for a chat room, and people could listen to people's music and rate it and boot each other off. There's quite a lot of trolling. I remember I used to constantly play Bass Hunter and get kicked out of our rooms.
Just to confirm, I totally mess with Bass Hunter, so he's still a legend in my book.
Oh yeah, he was always a legend. Why else would I play him?
He's still doing gigs, isn't he?
I think he is. I think he's very much on the Student Union and Butlin circuit. But you know,
right.
It's,
yeah.
I mean, Now You're Gone will always be a great song.
Of course.
Brings you right back to 2006. So yeah, I think it's a funny sort of origin story that we met on there. Turns out we shared a ton of interests, and then we're going and seeing I think we saw Hardwell and Showtech that summer that we actually met over there. We met up in central London and went out there. It was very good. And I guess I already related to that. I already know the answer to your next question on this. Would you say you're an early bird or a night owl?
Both. I am both.
Both. Interesting.
Funnily enough, I am both. There was a time where I was waking up at 4:30 every day.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. I always thought you were like an extreme night owl because you were doing stuff on the Hong Kong hours for trading.
Yes, well, it's very versatile, my sleeping pattern. I do go through phases where I'd wake up super early, get super productive during the day, but I also believe that the midnight oil is still quite a narrative in my life. So yeah, I mean, whenever an idea comes up or if there is work to be done during those hours, I will stay up and work. But for the most part, I do like getting up super early and getting things done then, just because I don't know, there's just something about being up while everyone else isn't.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And I forget his name, but there's a Navy SEAL who's quite popular in Jocko something, I think his name is. He talks about being up and awake before the enemy could be awake. It's a good feeling. I can't claim to hit that feeling much because I'm quite a late riser. But when I do manage to get up at sort of six and knock out a couple of hours of work, it is quite a good result for me.
Try and give it a go, man. Try and vary up the routine. I feel like that is something to be explored as well. Most people would think that they are Niles, where when they do switch, they actually find themselves to be more productive during the day. Which, yeah, I mean, that could be something that could be, you know, trained and worked on. So.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely kind of one of my long-term projects. I think I write better code in the morning as well, actually. And so throughout the day, are you more of a coffee or a tea person?
For caffeine purposes, definitely coffee. But for casual purposes, I do like my bubble tea. So, yes. A little bit of both, but more of a coffee guy, really.
Bubble tea. Not, do you make, like, is that at home or do you go out for that? Because I didn't even know you could make that at home.
It depends. I mean, I could make it at home, but getting a tapioca right, the consistency right at home, it's still a work in progress for me. So I do usually go out for it.
That's pretty impressive. You can even slightly make it. So that's the sort of thing I thought you'd need specialist equipment for.
Nah. All you need is a kettle.
Very nice. I'll have to give that a go. But if I burn myself, it's on you. Cool. And what job did you want to do as a kid? What was your dream job?
Believe it or not, I actually wanted to be a lawyer.
Really?
Yeah.
That is very unlike you.
Mm-hmm. I mean, looking back now, it's actually quite ridiculous. But I don't know. I guess I like to argue, especially with teachers back in school. And one of my teachers, during a parent-teacher conference, was telling my parents, like, I think you should try and do law. And I was thinking about it, and my first reaction was, probably not. But then I did very well in social sciences, so I thought that was the career path for me. But I realized, actually, I don't want to be doing essays my whole life, so.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah,
because you've kind of you've touched quite a lot of different areas actually. Because I think when I met you, you were still in university. I think you were doing like your like a psychology degree, right?
Psychology degree, yes.
Yeah, and I think around that time, actually, I think this ties in kind of with your background. I think that was when you were sort of launching one of your very first ventures, Cat's Eye, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's correct. It was a business funded by the University of Leicester. And I mean, yeah, that's my top tip to anyone that is still in university listening to this. Sign up to the enterprise program or if like whatever programs they have for you to start your own business. Usually that would come with funding if they like your business idea. So if you're paying $9,000 a year to go to university, why not get some money back to start your own thing and use the university's reputation to launch it? And I mean, as a student, you have loads of free time as well. let's not kid around. When you're at uni, you're just at home watching YouTube and Netflix, getting takeaways. You might as well either learn a skill or like launch your own business. There's no better way. Plus, you've already got the market. You're already at university. So,
yeah, absolutely. I think one of the biggest, there's obviously a raging debate going on at the moment about whether university's worth it. And I think it can be worth it. But you have to really take advantage of the time you're having in there. And there's it's such a good ecosystem to start a business because, as you already mentioned, the grants, but also as well, you have such an array of co-founders because you can sort them by what course they do and that kind of thing. It's great. You can go into different societies. Like if you're a computer science student, you can meet someone who's doing business and start something together that way or vice versa. Like there's so many different ways to meet a co-founder, different funding schemes, professors you can learn from. Like it's the sort of thing universities love promoting businesses that are spun out from them. And we've seen lots of the most successful tech startups over the past 10 to 20 years have come out of academic institutions.
For sure. I mean, if they're going to use you as a product as well, because it's a two-way street. It's good for you, but it's also very good for the university. So yeah, wholeheartedly agree. Take advantage of that ecosystem.
Absolutely. And Cat's Eye itself was a very cool business. I remember helping you a little bit at various events with it. So why don't you describe a little bit about the whole process? Because it was quite complicated. You had import-export deals going on and that sort of thing. And the product itself was very interesting.
I mean, it actually sounds a lot more complicated than it is. But literally all I had to do was come up with a brand name. Get a logo designed, go on Alibaba, look for a product, look for like a reputable supplier, order samples. Once the samples are good, put in a bulk order. And yeah, I mean, get an e-commerce website going, get everything set up. And it's actually really straightforward and it's so much easier these days. I mean, you've got these one-click platforms like Shopify where you can just deploy an e-commerce website within literally 20 minutes these days. And it's just as easy as that. I mean, you can get a minimal viable product going, yeah, within 20 to 30 minutes if you've got the skills and if you've got all your assets ready. Yeah, I mean, it's all a matter of, you know, finding your target market and all that. But yeah, that's when it gets a little bit more complicated. But to start something these days, super, super easy. To keep it running, different story.
Yeah, that's very well put, because the competition, with barriers to entry being lower, that's great, but it means the competition is much higher and you really have to find that USP. And I think your Cat's Eye branding was really cool. I remember going to Creamfields with you setting up that stall, sort of bombing up the motorway to Cheshire, try and get there for the trade deadline to set up our stall. That was a lot of fun, a lot of good memories. That's the exact kind of thing. It's like that you can make such amazing memories working in a business. I mean, it wasn't even my business. I was just helping you out and in exchange for a free ticket. And it's just you make such great memories doing that, and it's such a good experience. And it was something I had on my CV for a long time because it was just such a good conversation to have in an interview. It's like, yeah, my friend owns a diffraction glass, because I don't know if we've actually mentioned the actual product. Diffraction glasses was the product, wasn't it?
Yes. So they are essentially pieces of eyewear that are prisms. To be put simply, they're prisms for your eyes. So it has grating on it. So whenever light passes through, what you can see are like rainbows. So they're good for music festivals, fireworks displays, gigs and what have you. So yeah, I mean, they're the ones that you use in school to study light. And yeah, we just used it for a rave setting. And I put a cute little cat on it because, you know, the internet likes cats. And yeah, I mean, it just kind of worked for a few years. We're actually relaunching next year. We were going to do it this year, but I thought with Corona and everything, I didn't really want to like expose anyone to a lot of people. I mean, people would have been down to go do music festivals this year, but I think next year with a little bit more planning and yeah, because it does take quite a bit of logistics. But yeah, I mean, yeah, sometime next year.
Cool. That sounds really good. And you've obviously been able to run that mostly remotely. And that's why, you know, like in the intro, I explained how I describe you as quite a digital nomad. How's that experience been? Because you've worked from different places, like you worked from London, you worked from Manila in the Philippines, like all running Cat's Eye. How was that experience? Would you recommend it? Is there any kind of lessons you've learned from doing that?
I think as long as you've got the ecosystem running, I mean, as long as you build a really good foundation and as long as you've got very trustworthy partners in terms of logistics, your finances, if anything goes wrong, you've got those point people to delegate to whilst you're not physically there. And I think like one of the things that have come out of Corona is that we've proven that people can work from anywhere. And I mean, you've got companies like Ocado who are now giving their employees a month out of the year to work from anywhere in the world. So, I mean, it's actually really changed the whole being in an office narrative. And I feel like we don't actually really need to be there physically anymore to be productive and to be efficient. So, I mean, in terms of sticking points while you're away, like, obviously, I think it's actually a lot better if you outsource, to be honest with you. Because if you're not doing the shipping and handling yourself in terms of a retail brand, that is cutting out on so much, so much time. You don't have to line up at the post office, you know, sticking shipping labels. Like, once you get hundreds of orders a day, that takes a lot of time, actually. A time that you could be using growing the business in other ways. But obviously, when you're starting out, you need to, pull your sleeves up, do it yourself. But then once you do get those order quantities up, I feel like outsourcing is actually the way.
Yeah. I mean, would you suggest people, once they have a bit of capital behind them, sort of work with virtual assistants and that kind of thing? So I know people like Tim Ferriss really preach that in stuff like the 4-hour work week, which I think we might disagree a little bit on this, because I read it and I didn't 100% buy it, if you see what I mean. Mm-hmm. I thought some of the promises seemed somewhat unrealistic.
A lot of it is wishy-washy. I mean, you have to put a sensationalist headline on everything, right, for it to be able to sell. I mean, a 4-hour work week, it's not very realistic. I mean, people don't realize is, oh yeah, I want financial freedom, I want to be in control of my own time. No, actually, businesses take a lot more time. Like, us people that try and avoid 40-hour work weeks end up working 80. And yeah. That's just the reality of it. But the thing is, you're growing your company, so it is in, like, your best interest at the end of the day to dedicate a lot more time to it. So, yeah, I mean, don't be a slave to your own company as well. That's why you can delegate. I feel like I feel like that part of the whole book that he was preaching, you can delegate a lot of these tasks to other people for a lot cheaper. And also, there are people out there who are better than you at these things. So have an idea of what you want in terms of hiring freelancers. Like, study the ecosystem, but also, yeah, have a little bit of, like, a way to navigate that ecosystem first. Have an understanding. And I feel like once you get that, then you can hire the best people. And, I mean, coming from a recruiter, I guess, like, that is something that you can chime in on as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, first off, I like how this is the first series and I've already managed to take a shot at one of the biggest podcasts in the world. So if by some miracle Tim is listening, Tim, I'm so sorry. I do recommend your book. to address your point, obviously, yeah, when I was recruiting, it's very much, you just have to, because I specialize in recruiting for startups, the importance of founders delegating. And just making sure each hire adds a lot of value. You can do that on a micro level with people that are freelancing for you. With the new employment model that people are doing now, and you can work across borders, you don't have to have people as, like, PAYE sort of directly under you employees. You could utilize services via stuff like Fiverr and just have people working for you on an ad hoc basis. So it's a clever new way of doing business. And I know, like, the lean startup is a popular kind of mantra these days, and it's quite a good way of promoting that. If you're looking to start your first business and you're looking to do it on a relative shoestring without having to commit.
That's a must read, I reckon. That book is a must read.
It's a fantastic book. That and The Lean Startup and 0 to 1. If anyone wants to start a business, I absolutely would recommend you read both those books for sure. I mean, are there any others you'd recommend as well that would be on a must read?
Okay, so I would recommend How to Create a Story Brand, or I think it's Building a Story Brand by Donald Miller. And it is the quintessential book for branding and marketing, because that is one of the like biggest problems that I see in either people that are way too techie or way too creative, is that they do not know how to market themselves, and that is the most important thing. And essentially, the message of the book is make your message clear. When people ask you, what does your business do? You need to be able to say it within 5 to 10 seconds in like a real clear and concise way. Like if you ask me, what I do for a living, it's like, oh, I run a few businesses and I trade part time. And then, you know, it's just making your message clear. So what does your company do? You can't just put in buzzwords on buzzwords on buzzwords because people won't understand that.
Yeah, exactly. And it's got to be clear. I mean, I've heard about, I think, is it called the MUM test? Like where you have to basically, if you have to be able to concisely explain what your business does to your mother. And that's how you know it's effective and the mission statement is clear. Because I think you're right. People do get muddled, particularly I've noticed on the technical side. And I've been guilty of this myself, where even just internally, just trying to explain some kind of solution to non-technical people, I'll get way too in-depth on the most pointless stuff. And you need to practice giving a sort of sky high view, a bird's eye view even of what's going on and what the value add is. Like just practice it in front of a mirror, like speak for exactly like you say, 10 seconds. The elevator pitch traditionally is 60 seconds, but you should get it down to 5 or 10 seconds.
Yeah, really. five to 10. Yeah, I mean, 60 seconds is, yeah, I mean, that will actually give you time to go into a little bit more detail. But yes, I mean, like just a quick snap. It's like, okay, I see.
It's a good way to think of a motto that way as well. Yeah, if you go for the business tagline, I can't think of any off the top of my head. But like, if you're like Facebook calling itself, were they the original ones to call themselves a social network? Because that is an extremely good tagline. Whichever
I believe so. I believe so. Because Friendster and MySpace, I mean, while they were social networks in of themselves, I don't think they utilized that term.
Yeah, I don't know if they did either, and it's an interesting one. But yeah, being able to, I mean, you know, if you're getting to a point where you're defining a product that's so unique that it requires its own kind of industry, you know, things are going pretty well for you. So if you're already got the next Facebook, then you don't need to listen to my advice, certainly. I mean, we've talked quite a bit about self-employment, and generally the digital economy has been moving much more towards that and freelancing. What's your views on the future of that? Is it something you'd recommend people do, or is there any warnings you would have for people before they jump in?
In terms of becoming a freelancer, I mean, there's no barrier to entry. Like we were mentioning earlier, there's literally no barrier to entry. You can become a freelancer with like anything. With regards to anything, whether it's like photography, videography, if you code websites, if you're a designer, you can freelance just about any gig out there. However, there's also a million of you out there. So one piece of advice that I would give to people would be to incorporate yourselves as an LLC. From a practical standpoint, that in the UK costs about £14. And that, with that comes a lot of benefits in terms of funding, in terms of tax returns, because every expense is a business expense. So, I mean, you're not paying tax on a lot of these things. Before, working from home was the standard. I mean, your home is your office. So part of your electricity is a business cost as well. And people don't think about this. So, I mean, there's a ton of things that, we can go over in terms of that. But also, I mean, if you turn yourself into a company rather than just a freelancer, say you set up your own agency, people take you a lot more seriously rather than, oh, yeah, this guy made my website. It's like, no, actually, this website was made by this agency. So you kind of put a little bit more brand to your work.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think it's had so much weight behind it, especially if you're then subsequently working with other freelancers yourself, you're doing it under an umbrella. And for those who aren't familiar, LLC is a limited liability company. So if any company in the UK has got LTD or PLC for that matter, after name, it basically means that if you aren't familiar, it means that if you're the company's kind of debts and liabilities are its own, like someone can't if I ran my own limited company and someone sued me, they couldn't, I mean, I don't own a home, but they couldn't take my sort of home that I owned, or they couldn't take my car and that kind of thing as payment for a debt. The debt would go with the business. So there's obviously that clear advantage that way. So So it's LTD in the UK. I'm not sure about other places, but yeah, that's what an LLC is. If people aren't familiar. Yeah. So I guess related to that as well, as the economy sort of digitizes, we have more and more vacancies that currently can't be filled. Obviously, we understand this is a longer term project, but what kind of public and private policy do you think we can do to address the skills gap and ensure that the UK both stays and grows as a tech hub?
I was actually thinking about this during the notes, and I was having this discussion with he's a 17-year-old coder in Chile. His name is Ivan, and we were discussing how the foundations of education is actually where it really should start. And I feel like schools should at least offer what's possible that you can do, like, with the technology that you have literally in your hand. If there are any teenagers watching this, I mean, there's so much you could do with your laptops and your phones that you can full on run businesses just through that. And you can actually learn from these devices as well. But I mean, most of these educational institutions, they just don't, they're just so set in their ways in terms of, okay, this is the curriculum, this is all we're going to offer. I mean, I guess it's getting better now, but yeah, I mean, it starts there. I think they should at least offer what's possible. So, oh, actually, you can create an app doing this. I mean, there are fun ways to get kids engaged, and I mean, obviously, this comes it comes down to a lot more. Like sociopolitical issues in terms of that. But I feel like, yeah, I think we start in the schools.
Mm. Is there much of a difference? Because obviously you went to school in both the UK and the Philippines, right? Mm-hmm. So is there much of a difference between how in the UK we approach technical education and how we approach it as a career path versus how they do in the Philippines, do you find? Or was it pretty similar?
I mean, did you guys, like, in ITC, did you guys have like HTML courses or anything?
Because no, nothing. I mean, I'm 26. We didn't have anything like that. We stopped in year 8, so when we were 13.
Right. Okay. Because I actually coded my first website. I think I was 11 or 12. Okay. Because yeah, I mean, we did have a project where we had to use HTML. But then again, I was privately educated, so it might differ. However, yeah, I mean, we did have we did have courses like that where, yeah, we learned how to code. And I think that's where my love for building things kind of stemmed, really.
Interesting. And do you think Manila could potentially emerge as a major tech hub in the future?
I mean, it started as a call center hub, really. That's how the middle class actually, the emerging middle class formed, was like all these kids from the provinces would get jobs in call centers because all of these companies from the West would outsource from there. But however, now they have been outsourcing a lot of a lot of coding and design jobs to the Philippines because wages are so cheap. So yes, I believe so. I believe that Manila has the Philippines in general has a lot to offer in terms of the workforce in tech.
Yeah, because I was wondering about that because I figured it would be an ideal place to work with a team because people, from what I understand, the levels of people, a lot of people speak English and there's a lot of engineers out there. So it would be a great place to work with a team if you're maybe working with a team of freelancers, for example.
For sure, for sure. And I, funnily enough, like in the world of cryptocurrencies, there's this game called Axie Infinity at the moment. And like because of lockdown, a lot of people were like obviously left jobless, and they've been earning quite a bit of money just playing this cryptocurrency game. To now where people are, because the barrier to entry has become a lot higher, so people would actually outsource people playing the game to people in the Philippines, because yeah, they'd fund them, they fund it themselves, and yeah, they just take a profit share, which is yeah, I mean it's a crazy world, man.
It's funny how work evolves. Imagine trying to tell someone that even 20 years ago. That, yeah, I work with a team in the Philippines who play a game on my behalf, which rewards me with digital currencies.
Yeah, and that digital currency is being accepted as a payment method in some shops as well.
Yeah, and it also lurches by, it lurches by 50% every other week, so I try not to think about the value of my portfolio.
The thing is, this isn't actually very new. Like, one of my first businesses as a teenager was selling, like, online currency from, like, video games. So, I mean, my actual foundation for business was through these, like, online, like, MMORPGs. So, I mean, it's not actually new. I mean, I guess you could have called it a cryptocurrency back then, but the term I don't think was invented yet.
No, and I guess it wasn't held on a blockchain or a decentralized network.
No, but yeah, yeah. I mean, Chinese gold farmers were always a thing in World of Warcraft.
Yeah, that's right, wasn't it? You just pay someone to basically earn you XP on I never played World of Warcraft, but yeah, mm-hmm. It's a strange one, and then you just buy like a high-end account off them.
I sold gold myself and I actually bought my first laptop using World of Warcraft gold money, so
yeah, I mean that's one way to say to your parents, get out of my room, I'm earning money playing some World of Warcraft.
Yeah, just get your parents to set up a PayPal account for you.
Yeah.
And just make some money out there. There's so many ways to make money off the internet. That, yeah, I mean, the older generation doesn't need to understand. I mean, it's a new world and it's ours. And I feel like there are opportunities out there, and they're plentiful. Like you said, there's like tons of jobs that can't be filled, which is quite insane. But that's, I feel like that's due to people wanting to become self-employed and being in control of their own time. And yeah, I mean, with great power comes great responsibility, and like time is your most valuable asset. So like if you do go down that route, try to use it properly, because it's so easy to slack off. I know I did start, but I mean, yeah, it comes down to the discipline, I guess, as well. And you know, having a routine and all this. So yeah, it's by no means easy, but very doable.
Yeah, that's I totally agree. And I think viewing time as a economic resource is a useful way of thinking about things, where you know you can think, okay, well I'm gonna scheduling in time to relax and that sort of thing is very important, but just make sure you're either relaxing or working. Like, don't do some weird half thing where you've got four tabs open on your computer and you're telling yourself you're working, but actually you're only working 40% capacity.
Four tabs. Man, I see some people with like so many tabs open. I don't even know how. I don't know. How do you keep that many tabs open?
Yeah, well, we were just talking about how your computer is like shutting down if you have more than three Chrome tabs. I mean, Google Chrome will destroy your computer if you're not careful in general. You could be running like a NASA supercomputer or large Hadron Collider, and then Google Chrome will probably break it.
Brave browser is the one.
It is, but that runs on Chromium, to be fair. So it is Chrome under the hood. But yeah, Brave browser, I highly recommend as well, because the economic model of being paid for your attention to advertisements is, in my opinion, the future of consumer advertising, because if they're going to use our data and they're going to use our attention, we should at least be compensated for it. Because always remember, if you are not paying for something, you are the product.
Yes, for sure. Tip for you as well. I mean, you were saying that you were running a YouTube channel. Sign up as a Brave creator. So people I already have. Oh, nice. There you go.
It's a bit cheeky, but I've been tipping myself a bit of bat every now and again.
There you go. You have to.
Yeah. Just get the wallet working. But exactly. Yeah, so I've signed up as a creator there, and I think it's a great model. For those who aren't familiar, it distributes cryptocurrency to creators that you provide attention towards. So if you're, and it's got an ad blocker built in, so you don't get ads on stuff like YouTube, but your favorite YouTuber, if they're signed up as a creator, they'll be assigned some what we call basic attention token cryptocurrency. So it's a great way to support people, and you can make one-off donations as well that way, and you earn them by viewing advertisements on the platform. So yeah, I couldn't recommend it enough, and if Brave are listening, then please do sponsor us.
Try to get a deal with, I guess, crypto.com or like one of these, like cryptocurrency platforms, just because, oh yeah, that's another thing. If you are self-employed, and I mean, it's kind of hard to start with to get a reliable income. So one way to earn supplemental income would be through affiliate links. Before, influencers were a thing. I mean, affiliate marketing has always been a thing, and that will always be a thing. So, I mean, you can literally earn money off anything. If you use a product, especially to do with tech, you can create an Amazon link and share that with like your friends and your audience. And yeah, you can make a little bit of beer money here and there. But like it is a business model in of itself. But yeah, I mean, it's another form of supplemental income.
That was how I earned my first ever money myself. Was I ran a blog about ice hockey, which is a sport I love, and ran a blog about it. And yeah, had a like UTM link set up to a t-shirt store. And I'd earn sort of like not much, like £5 every time someone bought t-shirts. I think maybe like a 20 people bought things through the store. So, I think I spent it on a couple of PlayStation games. I must have been about 15.
That's 100 quid as a 15-year-old. That's a lot of money, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was certainly easier than the other thing I did, which was mowing lawns. It's much easier to watch an ice hockey match and then type up a match report. And then post it up because you enjoy doing it anyway. So, yeah, if any people are listening to this, particularly younger people that are worried about it, just start. Like seriously, just start. Like you just got to put yourself out there and enjoy it. And you know, you're in such a unique position to learn. And that was kind of going to be my final question for you, Romeo. I mean, we're kind of millennials in the sense that we're kind of in the middle of those two generations. What would you say to someone who's sort of Gen Z, like sort of kind of getting to university age now? What would be your kind of career / business advice for them?
Okay, so if you absolutely have to go to university, whether if it is for qualification's sake or your parents are absolutely forcing you to, just go and do it. It's a really good experience. And I mean, you do take out a student loan and what have you, but like I said earlier, it is a very good ecosystem to get your base started and to get funding through university. So I would still go, given the chance, and if it makes financial sense, I would still go. The people that you meet as well and the mentors that you get from university, priceless, really. But if you're going down this route of actually, I don't need to go to university or actually can't afford it, don't go. Anything that you want to learn is on the internet, really. I mean, you can do full on university courses on the internet. I mean, most of my practical like coding and like Photoshop experience, color correcting and what have you, just learn it off of YouTube. I mean, there's so many resources out there. So, I mean, as a kid, I guess it's about managing your time as well. And yeah, that's going to be difficult. There's so many distractions. There's friends, there's girls, you know, you're experiencing life. But yeah, you got a lot of time to actually try and learn a skill and differentiate yourself from the people out there, because everyone and their mother has a 2-1 these days. Like, I mean, if you, like, you, I mean, you get a 2-1 and then what? With no practical experience, you don't do anything with your university experience, then how the hell are you going to stand out, right? The amount of 2-1s, yeah, like 2-1s for your society CVs that you've probably, you know, put to the side, countless, right?
Yeah, I mean, when I did graduate recruitment for a little while, and it is hard to differentiate because we're very lucky to have some fantastic academic institutions in this country, and people come out of them and they have a great CV, but you have to do something that looks different, like start a business of some kind, like do something a bit different. Like, no, you don't have to get stuck in this 24/7 hustle culture. You don't, but just like still see your mates and play a sport or play an instrument, you know, but you just also try and do something that makes you stand out. It doesn't have to make money. I think that is the critical thing that I'd want to drive home. Like, you know, I know people that start adventures and lost money, but it got them a job down the line because it showed a bit of like tenaciousness and entrepreneurial spirit that people like to see. And just do something that makes you a bit different, like something that would work really well. Like I did a job abroad in the Czech Republic when I was 19. And it was really hot. I was sunburned all the time. Couldn't understand anything anyone was saying in the office. And I absolutely hated it. I've removed it from my LinkedIn, didn't enjoy it at all. But I actually got my first grad job because apparently what made me look different was apparently, oh, he went and worked in the Czech Republic when he was 19. That takes some guts. And so even if the experience doesn't feel great, then you never know what can come out of it.
For sure. Yeah, just do something. Just do something. Work on a project, say build an app or something, even if it doesn't, even if you get 3 downloads and one of which is you and your mom. I mean, it's yeah. Something, right? It's something. And down the line, it is going to pay off in dividends, really.
Yeah. And with cloud computing, like, you don't really have to pay very much if only like 2 people are downloading it. That's great. Like, you have auto scaling on, so if it goes viral, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, you've got nothing to lose. You're not having to hand build a server like our predecessors were. Like, I say hand built, obviously. They're not literally there with the blowtorch, like making a bare metal frames. What I mean is, like, you don't have physical servers, you know, in your bedroom and that kind of thing. We are so lucky to have these solutions there for us with free tiers. The amount of stuff you can create with free tools is unbelievable, and it can land you a really awesome job or springboard into an amazing entrepreneurial opportunity. So, yeah, I mean, the world's your oyster, and you know, make sure you make the most of your time if you are in university right now. But make sure you have fun too, because I'm sure we can both testify that we both have fun. But it's always good to get involved in something a bit different, something that makes you stand out, because it's a very competitive job market for juniors and grads.
Yes, for sure. And I feel like one of the most redeeming qualities about, future entrepreneurs is that curiosity of finding out how things work, how they're built, and how to do things. But the differentiator between the good ones and the people who actually make it is the people who act on this curiosity. And I feel like once you do act on it, like, the first thing you're going to put out there, it's going to be shit. This is...
I'm going to have to beat that. This is going to go on LinkedIn and stuff.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, yeah, it's going to be... It's not going to be very good. Like, the first thing that you put out there is not going to be the best. You can be a perfectionist all you want, and you can make the excuse that, actually, like, it's not perfect yet. I don't really want to put it out there. Just put it out there, man. Just put it out there. Get the feedback and then improve on it. There's like, that's why they call it a minimal viable product, is because you just need to get it to work first and get people interested and get people to say, oh, actually, you can improve on this or that. Or you, down the line, while you're in the shower, you might think, oh, actually, you get that light bulb moment. I could add this functionality, or I can move the I can move the hamburger menu a few inches. Things like that. And yeah, I mean, incremental. It's very incremental. People say all the time, it's a marathon, not a race. It's a damn marathon. And like, you're going to have to learn how to crawl first. like your first venture. I mean, it might be a success, it might not be. If you're lucky, it will be. But, you know, you're never going to know until you try.
Well, I guess always a good way to end this kind of discussion would be, I forget the guys, is it Max Levchin, one of the co-founders of PayPal? His most famous quote is that his first four companies ended in a bankruptcy and the fifth was PayPal.
Jeez!
Like, you know, it's about learning, and you can learn from failure, and you know, you either win or learn, right? Life's full of lessons.
That actually puts things into so much perspective, and yeah, I mean, it's having that grit of, you know, going through those failures as well and learning from those failures. But I mean, there's a lot of people. Failures that you can learn from, that you don't have to replicate yourself. I feel like some people are quite stubborn that they actually have to fail themselves, but you don't actually have to. There's a lot of mistakes that have been made, and you're gonna make mistakes, don't get me wrong. It's never gonna be perfect. We're all trying to strive for that perfection that will never be achieved, but all you can do is your best, really. And you know, equip yourself. Yeah, just.
I was going to say, just go to the library. Right now, go to the library. I don't care if it's closed. Kick the door down and just get out the Lean Startup and read that book, because it will confirm exactly what me and Romeo are saying. And you know, it comes with more credentials as well. So it's should definitely do that. Anyway, sorry, you were saying.
Yeah. I was just saying. I mean, the resources are out there, like you were saying, and you know, just go out there, equip yourself with these resources, and go out in the world. It sounds super wishy-washy, but it's like the most practical advice I can give.
Wishy-washy is the best way to end the podcast. Go out there and do it. Make your dreams come true. Achieve the impossible. This has been Cameron and Romeo, but Romeo, thank you so much for your time, mate. It is, and I mean this sincerely, it is always a pleasure catching up with you and putting the world to rights. And I think, had I not put sort of a rough time limit on this in my head, this could have gone on for 10 hours, and I think I would have ruined my Zencaster free tier plan.
I mean, you know, I'm kind of glad that you're doing this podcast as well, like you were saying. I mean, you've had this idea for years, and I'm actually glad that you've acted on it. So, you know, too many more episodes. And yeah, I mean, if you'll have me back on maybe in a few years, you know, that should be quite good.
It'd be a pleasure, mate. And it'd be really good. And yeah, thanks again. And for those of you who've made it this far to the end of the podcast, I just want to say a massive thank you for listening. You can check us out on YouTube. This has been Cameron with The Code of Career, helping you break into the tech industry and level up. And until next time, goodbye. Cheers.
See ya. Bye.